on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, October 10th, 2024. And as with any day, as time passes, changes happen. And that's true with markets. Markets are constantly changing. You know, it's 25 days until the presidential election, 82 days until we no longer put 2024 at the end of the date. And so now is not the time to lose focus. As with every show, as with every program, as with every podcast, as with every video, the goal here today is to leave a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to do that, we have a bunch of show topics for you today. Hopefully, we can get through some of those. Yesterday was quite the crazy day, I would say, with all those live calls, and I loved it. So if today were to shape up like that again as well, I would be very excited. But before we head into the educational items, the actionable items, before we talk about today's market for performance, let's tackle our first caller question now.
This is Kevin calling from La Crescenta, California. Today, I had a question about Wesco International. Ticker is WCC. Wondering what your thoughts are on this company and what a good buy price might be for this. Thanks for your thoughts in advance, and I'll look forward to listening to your answer on the show. Thank you.
So Wesco International, that is ticker WCC, is a pretty large business-to-business distribution, logistics, and supply chain company. Obviously, as you can imagine, with crumbling supply chains coming out of the pandemic, they had some pretty solid revenue growth from 2021 into 2022, but that's kind of tapered off a little bit. You see that although over the past 5 years, they've averaged 22% revenue growth, revenue is actually supposed to fall this year, and that's because demand has been weakening over the past 12 months. From a technical perspective, it looks not great. It's been ranging for quite some time between 150 and 170 and in a downward trend in some way since May. Now, as I mentioned, it's a fairly good-sized company. It's a mid-cap company, $8.1 billion market cap. And they did have $6.1 billion in debt at the end of last year, but it looks like they've paid that down modestly, down to $5.8 billion. They are not crazily levered, only about 3.28 times in terms of interest coverage ratio. And from a relative valuation perspective, it's pretty high above their five-year average for price to earnings, 12 times versus 9.9, price to book 1.7 versus 1.4. Price to cash flow well below, but there's probably some extraneous outliers that has made that average 57 times for a logistics company that is not something that you would typically see. Price to sales right about their average. And so with a lot of things, my issue is dried up growth due to demand falling is nothing that the business is doing specifically. I do like that the business is paying down some of their debt. But generally speaking, when I'm looking for companies such as this one, and you see that revenue growth has fallen off a cliff over the past year, I would expect to be able to buy it for a cheaper valuation than what I see here. And so given that valuations are near these long-term averages, and in case of price to earnings, a little bit above that long-term average, given that even though they've been paying down their debt, they still have a pretty sizable amount of debt for the business. Given that although cash flow has been improving, net margins remain pretty stable, 2.8 back 5 years ago, 2.8 this year, actually falling from the past 2 years. And given that growth seems to be just drying up, and this doesn't seem like a good deal given relative valuations, I would have to pass on Wesco International. I think there are, coming into next year where demand should start to pick up again, I think there are a lot of better opportunities that have more advantageous relative valuations. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this topic: strong jobs data, what it means for interest rates, and what it means for the markets. Robust employment figures for September surpassed expectations and may lead to a more cautious approach from the Fed regarding rate cuts. We'll also touch on cat bonds. No, not like the feline, but rather catastrophe bonds. What are they? What are their purposes? How might these recent hurricanes be affecting the market for cat bonds? And what does it mean for the insurance industry as a whole? We'll also touch on a bank settlement with the DOJ. TD Bank had to settle today for some, not good money laundering practices. What that means for the bank, what that means for their growth, and what that means for the U.S. banking sector as a whole. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on a warning from Delta about a revenue hit headed towards the end of the year. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play. One on NANR, which is the Spider S&P North American Natural Resources ETF, and Coinbase Global Inc., as well as some questions from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome and encourage you to call anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, I will talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold? G-O-L-D.
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important, but so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls.
If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
It's like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk, weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks finished lower in fairly choppy trading. The Dow down 14 basis points. S&P 500 down 21 basis points. NASDAQ only down 5 basis points. And the Russell 2000 leading the way downward, down 55 basis points. Laggards included airlines, building products, home builders, housing-related retail. Outperformers included P&C insurance, really on the back of Milton not being as bad as the worst-case scenario. Energy doing well, copper and aluminum, managed care, rail, cybersecurity, drugstores doing well today. Treasuries were mixed with the curve notably steepening, the 10-year now up 34 basis points over the past 7 sessions. Dollar index slightly lower after 8 sessions of being higher. Gold finishing up 50 basis points. Crude oil, big gain on the day, up 3.6%. Closing near best levels amid reporting Israel's cabinet tonight could approve retaliatory strikes on Iran. Some of the downside probably related to the hotter than expected CPI print, though both analysts and Fed officials played down that report. One, because as we mentioned yesterday, they're shifting away from inflation, focused more on the labor market. But two, is it's just a singular month. Regardless, the September CPI came in a bit hotter than consensus on both the headline and core measures, food and shelter among the big drivers, though shelter inflation eased off after an outsized August rise. On the jobs front, inflation claims printed at 258,000, well above consensus for 229,000. Highest weekly level since August, though. It's important to note that much of that could be colored by both hurricanes that came through, artificially raising those numbers. In terms of Fed speak, Bostic from Atlanta told reporters that choppy recent data may merit a pause in November. Goolsby out of Chicago noted inflation clearly going down, though more data to come. Florida hit overnight by that hurricane, Hurricane Milton. Though storm weakened somewhat ahead of landfall, and early suggestions are the damage may be less than feared. Latest earnings updates also offered some mixed takeaways about consumer trends, but regardless, the S&P and NASDAQ are still on pace for weekly gains. Rounding out the week tomorrow in terms of macro data is a PPI, so we look forward to that. I hope you've been telling your friends and family members, your babysitters, your mailman, that random person you see walking the dog around the neighborhood, that our audio podcast is also now posted in video form on our YouTube channel. Just go over to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's. And if you're interested in leaving us a question in the comment section, feel free, because we'd like to get to those as soon as we can. This question from Randy Ramos says, would love to get your opinion on General Dynamics versus Lockheed Martin. Looking for good long-term industrial aerospace stocks. So let's take a look at Lockheed Martin, because we like to give everybody a chance to get their question in. And sometimes it's difficult to do two stocks within the time frame. So Lockheed Martin is an aerospace defense name. It is, I believe, most of their testing is still done in Southern California. I could be wrong. But regardless, that is irrelevant to the point here. And so year to date, they are doing particularly well. Why? Well, unfortunately, geopolitical tensions tend to be pretty good for business in the aerospace defense area. Year to date, up 31%. Revenue growth, pretty solid over the past 5 years, averaging about 5%. Revenue growth on an annualized basis. Revenue is supposed to be up from $67.5 billion to $71 billion this year. Net margins are relatively stable between about 9 and 10% over the past 5 years. Return on equity improving from coming out of the pandemic in 2022. Now, it's a very large company, $144 billion, with about $18 billion, rather $19.2 billion as the most recent quarter. Of debt, so not too much debt. They've been buying back shares over the past couple of years. Their cash flow is improving. As I mentioned, their profitability is pretty stable in terms of their margins, and their earnings have been upgraded the past couple of months. As with a lot of these mature companies, they pay a dividend somewhere in the 2 to 3% range, and their dividends per share has been increasing every year. A lot of that may be due to shares being bought back, but still the growth outpaces share repurchases, up from $8.20 per share back in 2018, projected to be $12.81 per share this year. From a relative valuation perspective, they are trading kind of high relative to their five-year average, 21 times forward-looking earnings, 23 times price to book, 16 times cash flow. You know, I think certainly I can't speak about Global Dynamics because we're looking at Lockheed Martin, but generally speaking, I think that Lockheed Martin is a solid company that is intertwined very much within the aerospace defense industry for the United States and its allies. They have some very strong patents, and demand is unlikely to go anywhere, certainly over the next couple years. So it's a little expensive right now, but I mean, that makes sense given it's up almost 40%. Over the past year. I'd keep it on my watch list for now, wait for it to come back down to maybe closer around, I don't know, 14 times price to cash flow, maybe down to 1.5 times sales, maybe down to closer to the 17 times forward-looking price to earnings range. Thanks for the call or the comment. That was a viewer. So we're back to the Invest Talk Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier from my town, Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Eric calling from Los Angeles. I'm a longtime listener and love the show. I had a question about ticker symbol COIN, COIN, Coinbase Global Inc. I don't have any crypto, and I was wondering if this is a good stock in order to get a position in cryptocurrency without actually investing in a single crypto coin. And so I was wondering what you thought about a good entry point. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
So we're looking at Coinbase. I think most people know what Coinbase is. And Coinbase is it's a exchange. It's a financial infrastructure, crypto product company. They have decentralized apps, self-custody wallets, all sorts of things that are necessary if you want to trade crypto. And as you'd expect, it's a pretty volatile name. You know how you know? Because over 3 months, it's down 25%. Over the 1 year, it's up 106%. Revenue has grown pretty substantially, though not nearly what it was during the pandemic. Why? Because a lot of their business is going to be off of trading fees within their exchange. Cash flow has fallen since the pandemic. Profitability has fallen since the pandemic. And that's because, well, frankly, a lot of the environmental factors that caused a lot of retail traders to pop into crypto are not really what they were back when everybody was stuck at home. And so even though liquidity has peaked back, crypto trading, crypto volume has not. So you are correct. You're going to generally get the exposure of cryptocurrencies because of, well, what kind of company this is. Either way, I'm not the biggest fan of Coinbase, and generally I'm surprised that liquidity has not boosted crypto as much as really I expected it to. So for now, I would stay away from Coinbase, ticker C-O-I-N. Headed to break, still to come on this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. Stay with me.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today concerns this topic, strong jobs data, what it means for interest rates and the markets. And so today let's break down how strong U.S. jobs numbers are shaking up expectations for Federal Reserve rate cuts and what that could mean for markets. Last week's blowout labor report showed the U.S. added more than 100,000 jobs above the expectations. Suggesting that the economy might not need as many large rate cuts as traders had been banking on. It's already led to a big shift in markets where bets on steep Fed cuts have been fueling everything from higher Treasury prices to a weaker US dollar. The impact on the dollar is pretty notable. Net bets against the dollar hit their highest levels in a year, but following the jobs report, the dollar rebounded, and traders may need to unwind those bearish positions. What about Treasury yields? Well, Treasury yields are also climbing. The 10-year yield, which had dropped as low as 3.6% in September, hit almost 4% after Friday's data. The jobs report caught the market off guard and led to bond market trades. In the stock market, the stronger jobs report could lead investors to shift their focus from hedging against downside risk to chasing gains, potentially pushing the S&P 500 even higher. Some analysts see that this could be shape up to be fuel for what a lot of people call a melt-up scenario in stocks. However, there's also a warning. If Treasury yields rise too fast, it could make bonds more attractive relative to stocks, which, if you think about it, would dampen the appeal of riskier assets and may flatten or push down equity prices relative to bonds. Still, as we've mentioned for quite some time, the path of least resistance seems to be upward for the foreseeable future. Bottom line, stronger than expected job growth has thrown a wrench in predictions for deep Fed rate cuts, and markets are adjusting quickly. From the dollar to stocks, the next few weeks could be crucial as traders reassess their bets heading into an election and into year end. Let's go ahead and play another caller question now.
I wanted your opinion on ticker symbol DMB. Bank of New York Mellon Municipal Bond Infrastructure Fund. I was looking at it for a taxable portfolio. Again, the ticker symbol is DMB. Thank you.
Okay, let's take a look at ticker DMB. I think it is this one. There are two DMBs. Sometimes these mutual fund tickers are five letters, so it's a little difficult sometimes to get them. But this is the BNY Mellon Opportunistic Municipal Securities Fund. The fund is actively managed, aims to generate tax-exempt income by investing at least 80% of its net assets in municipal bonds, primarily invests in investment-grade bonds with up to 30% allocated to high-yield or junk bonds. Those are just bonds that have lower ratings, higher credit risk. And so it looks like about 98% in the United States, a little bit of Puerto Rican exposure. They hold about 232 different issuances. Top 10 names make up 11%. Pretty well diversified bond fund. The AUM is really small, though. This could just be the share class. Again, this is DMBY or DMBYX. There are other share classes within this fund. So overall, I expect the AUM to be probably higher, given that it's a BNY Mellon fund. Let's see what the duration looks like. I'm not seeing any data on the duration. You know what? I'm going to take this time to talk about municipal bonds. And a lot of people like the idea of being tax-free or having tax advantages. And so they reach for municipal bonds when they do not fall within the category of income that municipal bonds will help. And so I want to reorient your mind in that you shouldn't be thinking about just the net return of a fund. You shouldn't be thinking about just the tax benefits of owning a fund. You should be thinking about the after-tax return. Because for most investors, municipal bonds are going to offer lower rates and not the tax benefit that they think they have. So if the caller is somebody who is in one of the higher tax brackets and they are going to benefit from holding a municipal bond, I think this is fine. I mean, it's just going to give you, generally speaking, investment grade exposure. You know, when credit spreads tend to be narrower like they are now, I think it's okay to be up to 30% in junk bonds and high yield bonds because, well, the credit risk just isn't there such that you would expect a large portion of those high yield junk bonds to default. And so again, when credit spreads narrow, this is the time that it's okay to take on a little bit more risk to try and get a little bit more yield, especially if rates have been, or rates are being cut. Though, you know, looking at the yield curve, you aren't really seeing rates in the real world fall, even though the Fed is cutting rates. But regardless, I think the key here is only invest in municipal bonds if you belong to a high tax bracket for which it's beneficial. I know we all love to not pay the tax, man, but sometimes you're actually just worse off. On the next Invest Talk, the story behind this headline. The financial impact of natural disasters, what you need to know. Severe weather events are increasingly frequent and costly, and they can lead to declines in credit scores, increased debt collection, and mortgage delinquencies. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend? Something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we have a live call. These are always fun. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park asking about ticker NVO. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Actually, I'm looking to buy it. Looks like it's been down. It was at 148 not that long ago, and I'm interested in the weight loss sector, I guess.
It's certainly a hot topic in today's markets. And you can see that in the fact that, you know, it's up 13% year to date, even though in the past month, NVO is actually down 12%. Now, why is it down? Well, they had some less than stellar results from clinical trials, and there's been a lot of supply chain pressure related to Wegovy. And so you have this coming from two fronts, right? It's becoming a little bit more expensive to manufacture, but then you also have pressure from the U.S. government and U.S. consumers that, well, every other country on earth pays a substantially lower price for these drugs than we do. And so there's a lot of talk about potential regulation or trying to force some of those prices down. And so it's kind of being attacked on two sides. And in the wake of that, in the wake of the clinical trial, you've seen a 12% about drop off in the past month. Now, I like this name. I like these, it's a bad sentence to say I like these drugs, but I like what these drugs are doing, from a societal perspective, certainly, but also because they are making a lot of money doing it. Sales revenue is up 13% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. This company has very little debt. It's got $8 billion in debt on an almost $400 billion market cap company. They don't issue shares. In fact, they buy back shares, and they've done so consistently over the past 5 years. They pay a solid dividend, about 1%. Nothing too crazy, but dang it, it's consistent, and that is what we like. And not only that, they've been increasing their dividend for the past 5 years from $44 a share, projected to be $1.62 per share this year. And so what I see here is a company that is fundamentally sound, a company that has a great product, but looking at their relative valuation, they're still trading pretty expensively, 31 times cash flow, 14 times sales, a decent clip above their five-year averages. And I think that's because of all the hype associated with these drugs. And so as you've seen the first trickling of information about things becoming more expensive, I think you can probably expect a little bit more of a pullback down from where it's trading at right now. It may test that new support at around 115. And if it does, it could fall back all the way down closer to the 100, 110 range. And so for now, I would keep it on my watch list. But I do like where your head is, because I think that, you know, over the next 5-10 years, certainly this will be one of the more successful companies as their drug is just really catching on fire. Thanks for the call. Well, let's talk about another, let's say, hot button issue, something else in the news, and that is hurricanes. Let's take a look at how Hurricane Milton is shaking up the cat bond market, the catastrophe bond market. Now, with the storm expected to have caused some major damage, though less than what the worst case scenarios were along the Florida coast, the insurance industry is bracing for potential losses in the billions. And so enter investors and cat bonds. Now, cat bonds are a type of reinsurance product where insurers transfer some of their risk to investors in exchange for a coupon. Now, if natural disasters like hurricanes hit hard enough, not just if they hit, but hard enough, these bonds can be triggered, meaning investors will have to cover some of the insurer's losses. Now, this only works because not all storms trigger these bonds, only those with significant impacts. And so with Milton predicted to be one of the worst storms Florida has seen in a century, it has the potential to affect the cat bond market in a big way. Morningstar DBRS has estimated that the hurricane could cause insured losses between $30 and $60 billion, far surpassing losses even from the Hurricane Helene last month. While Helene's impact on cat bonds was relatively minor, Milton could be a different story. Despite past costly weather events, the cat bond market has remained pretty strong, demand increasing year over year. It's important to note the cat bond issuance in 2024 could even top $50 billion. However, Milton could cause a short-term disruption. Some market participants are already seeing discounts for Florida-exposed bonds and secondary trading, with early projections suggesting Milton could cause a 10-cent drop on the dollar for some cat bonds. Still, specialists are divided on what Milton's long-term impacts could be, as intensifying weather patterns may encourage insurers to rely even more heavily on the cat bonds in the future to cover their big losses. And so Hurricane Milton is set to test the cat bond market, potentially causing losses for investors while creating new opportunities for insurers to turn to this growing market for reinsurance. The outcome of it all may signal the growth of this niche area of the market going forward. Let's dip back into the InvestTalk voice bank for a call that came in earlier. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin. This is Jake from Northern California. I was calling today to ask about NANR, North American Natural Resources ETF. I've held this for a couple of years in my retirement account, and I did have a price target of around $57 to $58, which it's sitting in right now. So I was thinking about taking some profits on this. Expense ratio is about 35 basis points and does hold a lot of companies that I do like, but wanted to just see what you guys thought of this company or this ETF and whether or not trimming was a good idea here. Also, I know you guys just had your webinar touching on retirement accounts, and I was wondering if that is anywhere on the website or YouTube that I could watch it, since I was not able to attend when it was actually live. I appreciate it, and have a good day.
Well, let's answer the second question first, because it's quick and easy, and thanks for plugging the webinar. And so if it is not already, it should be available on our YouTube channel shortly. Just search InvestTalk with two T's. You should be able to find, I think all of our webinars are there. If they aren't, if it isn't uploaded yet, I will make sure it gets uploaded soon, because I think it is a very helpful one. Looks like I have heard from my producer, Tom, that it is in fact there now. So go check it out if you are interested. Now, getting back to the other part of your question, which is NANR, the Spider S&P North American Natural Resources ETF. As you'd expect, it is a materials and energy ETF. It invests in large and mid-cap firms that both run businesses that are involved in natural resources and actually mine the commodities themselves. Its revenue is pretty split, but mostly in North America, United States, about 40% of its revenue, Canada, 15%. Not much Chinese exposure, something that given what's going on in the Chinese market, I actually like right now. Primarily large caps, though they call themselves a large and mid-cap tracking fund, 96% in large caps, 2.77% in mid-caps, no small caps, no micro-caps. Caller was correct, it is 35 basis points. And so it's pretty highly concentrated amongst the top names, Chevron and Exxon. Exxon first, actually. Exxon, then Chevron. Make up 16% in aggregate. Exxon, 10.3%. Chevron, 6.48%. The top 10 make up 41%. And then the other 142 names make up about 58.76% of the portfolio. And so as energy has been doing well the past couple of days, oil reaching a local or, you know, reaching a, certainly a local high relative to where it's been trading the past couple of weeks, the fund is doing well. And so I am an advocate of taking profit when you have an opportunity to take profit, when things start to get out of whack in terms of what your predetermined weights are, target weights are. But you said it yourself. Your original plan was to take some profit at 57, 58. And the most important thing about investing is discipline. If you set that price target, you had a reason to set that price target. Nobody went broke taking profit. I would take a little profit here. Certainly as we head into a time period where demand should increase for industrial products, for materials, for commodities, I think it's good to have exposure to this sector. But you know what? You had a plan. Stick to it. Thanks for the call. Now, here's another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel comment section. This one from Carter Erickson, who has a question about the first alphabetical ticker, and that is A, Agilent Technologies. It says, what are your thoughts on ticker symbol A? I have a full position, 4-5%, and I'm wondering if it's worth holding long-term or if I should move on. So as the rest of this pulls up on my myriad of screens, let's take a look at, I'm going to butcher the name again, Agilent Technologies. It is a software solutions company primarily in life sciences, diagnostics, and applied chemical market. It is a fairly large company, $41 billion market cap company. It's got very little debt, though the debt has doubled since. Actually, no, it's about where it's been. So $2.9 billion in debt. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability has been improving. They pay a little bit of a dividend. 65 basis points is what their yield is. And that's about where it's been over the past 5 years. Now that dividend has grown from 60 cents per share back in 2018, projected to be 94 cents per share this year. Relative valuation basis, we're exactly where we are on our five-year averages. Price to sales, price to book, price to earnings, price to cash flow, pretty much where it is over the past 5 years. And it's pretty well diversified, I would say, in terms of its geographic exposure. 35% of its revenue coming from the United States, 26% of its revenue coming from Europe, and about 20% of its revenue coming from China. That's a lot of Chinese exposure, especially given what we've talked about over the past couple weeks on China, past couple weeks and days on China. And so that is certainly a red flag I have for me. Let's look at their growth. It looks like the past 5 years, their growth has been about 7% on an annualized basis, but falling over the past 2 years. October 2022, it looks like it reached a high of $6.8 billion in terms of revenue, down to $6.83 billion last year, projected to be $6.4 billion this year. And so, you know, I think that it's an important, it certainly has an important role, this company and companies like this, in not just testing in pharmaceuticals and within the semiconductor space. I'm actually interested in terms of their business segment. Yeah, it looks like life sciences. Yeah, that makes a pretty hefty portion of their revenue stream. You know, I think that overall, this is a company that has been pretty flat for the year. And why? It's because growth has fallen off. Now, I would probably classify this as a company that is trading at its fair value. And I'm not really that excited overall about it. I think that if you are going to invest within this space, I would dip a little bit smaller. You know, historically, we know that small caps, mid caps over longer periods of time tend to outperform. This is a very mature company, as you can see by its very stable dividend and its stable cash flow and its stable profitability. I'm not saying it's a bad company, but maybe there are other areas within this sector to reach for growth. Thanks for the call. That's Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads. Thanks to you and your friends. So hang on, our work continues in 30 seconds.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. InvestTalk is a free download. Your participation makes it unique. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My question is, would you consider Johnson & Johnson a value stock? Over a long period of time, it looks like it's done pretty well. Looks like it's secure. I'm just looking to see if this is a good value stock to put money towards. I'm only 27, and you have extra time just to touch on if this is the type of company that I should be, I guess, overweight and underweight, or have at least some position in as a 27-year-old. Long investing future. And I know that's a lot, but hopefully you can answer as much of that as possible. And I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks as always. Bye.
So Johnson & Johnson has its fingers in a lot of baskets, pharmaceutical company. It has a med tech portfolio and it's a bunch of other products, but regardless, it did particularly well coming into the pandemic, right? $95 billion in revenue in 2022, $93 billion in revenue in 2021. And so that's fallen off, as to be expected, given the drop off in some of their products that were used during the COVID pandemic. But that being said, there is still some pretty strong demand within their pharmaceutical business, and it's trading at a pretty fair valuation, 15 times forward-looking price to earnings, 5.4 times price to book, lower than its five-year average, price to cash flow at about 15 times, price to sales about 4.5 times. When I look at this, and you're talking about a value play with a company that has several new product launches on the horizon, they have certainly a pipeline of some pretty strong candidate drugs that could re-bolster growth headed forward. And so when you say, okay, you're 27, do you want exposure to a company like this? Yeah, I think it's good to have large cap exposure within the healthcare space. A lot of people tend to reach towards the lower end of med tech, biopharma, and names that are not making any money, that are losing money, that are, you know, potential 10 times returners. But guess what? Only 0.0001% of those do it. And so when you see this company, which is one that has bought back shares in the past couple of years, one whose cash flow has been improving, one whose profitability has been stable, their dividend is stable, they have very little debt, $41 billion on a nearly $400 billion market cap company, and they have potential good products on the horizon, I think, yeah, this is the exact type of company that you should have some exposure to. Now, it's important to note that, again, this is more of the, you know, value play, sustainable names. You're not going to get a crazy amount of growth out of here, but this is a relatively stable name that has some pretty solid products that will continue to be in demand in the future. Look at that. Net margin surpassing this year what it was during the pandemic, projected to be 27.2%. You know, just to touch on actually a part of this call, which was the call before the InvestTalk Wealth webinar, it was actually kind of cool because it only lasted for about, you know, 20, 25 minutes, our prepared presentation. And we answered a lot of questions, which were not primarily stock questions. They were questions on the economy, on the election, all sorts of topics that are not person specific, but maybe interesting to you. So go check that out on our YouTube channel. That's InvestTalk with two T's. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve financial freedom. And our work continues after this break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to dip back into our Invest Talk YouTube question bank once more before we head off for the day and answer this question that came in from Noah on CVE. It says, I remember you talking about Cenovus Energy, CVE, back in July, and how they might have good plans ahead because of the new oil pipeline projects. Do you still have an optimistic outlook for them? So let's take a look at ticker CVE, Cenovus Energy. It's an integrated oil company, and they are more recently becoming a, you know, an integrated producer. But it has had a long story of being within the, let's say, upstream market for oil. Now, sorry if you can hear my cat in the background. Now, it had a pretty solid day, up 1.66%, as to be expected, as oil has been up. And overall, I think that it is a pretty mature and solid name within this space. And as it's transitioned into becoming an integrated oil company and transforming its business in a way, it is less subject to the, let's say, cyclical downturns as some other companies within the industry will be. Now, in terms of its forward-looking price to earnings, it's trading below its five-year average price to book, about at its five-year average price to cash flow, well below its five-year average. And so, again, the question becomes, what are you trying to get exposure to? And if you are trying to get exposure to the energy sector, which I think you should, and certainly we've been saying that for a long time, and as tensions have picked up in the Middle East, we've seen why. But if you're trying to get some exposure like this, I think this is a solid company to do it because of how it has transformed its business and its projects that are in the pipeline. It's also trading at a pretty reasonable valuation and has very little debt, $7.3 billion on a $32 billion market cap company. Cash flow, profitability, I'm looking at it, headed in the right direction. So yes, I still think that Cenovus Energy is a pretty solid company. Thanks for watching. Let's talk a little bit about TD Bank. And TD Bank has agreed to pay over $3 billion in penalties and is facing limits on its U.S. growth as part of a settlement with regulators and prosecutors over charges related to its failure to monitor money laundering for criminal groups, including, good ones, drug cartels. This agreement, announced Thursday, highlights severe lapses in TD's anti-money laundering AML programs. Federal authorities revealed that TD allowed criminal networks, plural, to transfer over $670 million through its accounts between 2019 and 2023, including a major scheme involving a Chinese criminal operation laundering fentanyl profits. As a result, TD's U.S. operations now face restrictions. Its U.S. retail business growth is effectively capped at its current level of assets. TD Bank's penalties are extensive, including $1.8 billion to the Department of Justice, $1.3 billion to the Treasury Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, the largest civil penalty in the agency's history, and $450 million to the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, not an office you would like to upset. The bank has admitted it has some AML deficiencies, though I don't think admissions were necessary, and its CEO has announced that he will step down after leading efforts to address the bank's issues. TD's U.S. ambitions have been hit hard by this scandal, certainly because they are capped at where their current asset levels are, especially after its $13.4 billion acquisition of Tennessee's First Horizon fell through in May because regulators were concerned. Guess they had some rights to be concerned. Now, while TD has been making changes to address these issues, the growth restrictions imposed on its U.S. retail business probably signal more than anything that there is a particularly tough road ahead for the bank. In the United States, analysts are predicting a period of earnings underperformance for Canada's second largest bank. Historically speaking, this settlement marks a significant moment in financial regulation and I would say underscores the importance of strong internal controls, particularly in monitoring for money laundering. With U.S. growth stalled and substantial penalties, their path is challenging. And I think more than anything, this is indicative of an enforcement apparatus that wants to send messages to other banks that you need to clean up shop or you will face punishment. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. If you head over to iTunes, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. That really helps us out. As I've been saying, we are also available in video form on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. Just search InvestTalk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.